Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Father Darrell, would you lead us in a prayer of thanks?
You mean like saying grace?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Lord, I'm sure you have your reasons for turning the whole world upside down. Maybe we deserve it for being so mean to each other. We probably do deserve it. But not tonight. No. Tonight is good. And if this isn't good enough for you, I don't know what is. Amen.
Bonjour, Zed Heads. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And je m'appelle Lucy.
Lucy. This is The Cast of Us, episode 599.
599. Mm. And this episode, we're catching you up on everything that's happened so far on The Darrell Show.
Everything that's in Wikipedia.
Yes, everything within the boundaries of Wikipedia's guidelines.
Short, curt synopses. Yeah, we're excited. It's coming back. I actually binged the whole first season yesterday in one day. And it was pretty cool to watch it all together like that. It was like a movie. I watched it at 1.5 speed. So it was like a 3-hour movie.
But it's like so pondering and fresh that it probably just felt like normal speed, right?
Yeah, exactly. Kind of in some places. But it held together really well, I thought. And and it did. It did feel like a movie. You could feel a beginning, middle, and end, even though it was sort of a cliffhanger-y kind of a thing. Good. Book of Carol, of course, premieres Sunday, September 29th. So that's why we figured let's get in and remind everyone of what happened in Daryl Dixon season one. And we'll do our catch-up format, which is where we'll go through episode by episode, read the synopses, and just talk about a few notes about what stood out or anything that comes up. I had a couple notes prepared, but nothing major.
I'm coming in pretty fresh. I tried to do a rewatch and I got halfway through episode two, and then I was like, no, I have like an improv show, and it was all very stressful, but
it'll come back.
I liked
to you
what I saw, and it will come back to me. Absolutely. I couldn't believe it was only 6 episodes. It felt longer in a good way, but
And we loved the, we're going to get to it, but since we're talking about it, where it showed the flashback of the beginnings of the apocalypse in Paris. Remember that? And I didn't realize that was the second episode. I didn't realize it came so quickly.
Same. That was, so I definitely rewatched that bit and I was like, oh my God, was this only episode two? This show came out strong, man.
It did. Yeah. And they're all 6. I think season two is 6 episodes. Well, I know it is because we got screeners and I have all 6 sitting on my hard drive right now.
I don't have my screeners yet. AMC, get on it.
But I haven't even watched the first one yet because I wanted to do the catch up without knowing what was going to happen, and we'll be good and only watch one at a time. It'll let us record early so we can have the episodes out right after they air And then if we get enough feedback from you guys, then maybe we'll do separate feedback episodes like we did last time. But if not, then we'll just cover an episode's feedback in the next week later.
Yeah. I'm amazed they gave us all six. With the ones who live, we got four.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It is. Yeah, it's odd that they did that, but I was happy about it. It's cool.
It's good. I think it's because Norman Reedus saw me in my role. Yeah,
that's probably what happened, yeah. Okay, do you want to read the first synopsis?
Yes. Okay, so season one, episode one, L'Âme Perdue. Daryl Dixon washes ashore in France and sets out to return to America. He suffers an arm wound upon encountering a new Walker variant called Burners. Near Marseille, Daryl encounters Marie-Belle and her grandfather Guillaume, Henri and Michel, soldiers from a paramilitary group called Pouvoir des Vivants, Power of the Living, attack them and are killed before Marie-Belle and Guillaume rob Daryl and flee. The pair are caught by Michel's brother Caudron, who kills Guillaume and seeks revenge on Daryl on the assumption that he killed Michel. Isabelle, a nun for Union de l'Espoir, Union of Hope, finds Daryl and takes him to her abbey for sexual treatment. She introduces Daryl to the most annoying person you'll ever meet in your life, or the Messiah, Laurent, a young boy the Union believes is the Messiah destined to revive humanity. He is also good at Rubik's Cubes. She believes Daryl is the messenger who must deliver Laurent to the Union contingent in Paris. He rejects the idea and leaves. Caudron's men attack the abbey, killing most of the nuns, but Daryl returns and helps defend off the assailants. Daryl agrees to help in exchange for Isabelle leading him to Le Havre. It's revealed that a Pouvoir ship transporting Walker test subjects took Daryl from America, but he instigated a mutiny, destroyed their research, and escaped. Genet, the leader of Pouvoir, orders that Daryl Dixon be found.
Fine, Dixon. Dun, dun, dun. I can't remember why Daryl went back to the convent and was able to help them fight off Caudron. He just showed up.
I thought he never left, but yeah.
He did. He was like, I'm not into this. And he left and then...
No, thank you.
He's like, I don't want to help this kid.
Maybe he sees them coming back and feels responsible.
Yeah. Yeah, that must be it. I don't know. I don't think he changed his mind. Yeah, I think he saw them. At least not by that point. What was I going to say to, the fact that Caudron, so I hope people remember all these names and everything. Caudron is the guy with the tattoo on his neck, right?
Tattoo neck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Scary dude.
He just killed this old guy.
Oh yeah.
Because the guy annoyed him.
Yeah.
And so they start to make him seem like a bit of a sympathetic character towards the end. Full spoilers, by the way, if you haven't seen the Daryl show, I highly recommend you go watch it because we're going to be spoiling stuff, but you should watch it first. But towards the end, he has a chance to kill Daryl and he lets him go. And it's like, is he like turning into a good guy? But man, he was that's pretty messed up to just kill some old guy because
he's super
giving you back talk.
Yeah. And one of the things that I know we spoke about on the show, but is striking, because this is the one episode I did have a chance to properly rewatch, really struck me was the way that they parallel Merle's death with Caudron and his brother, like Caudron finding him and having to put him down. That hit hard. Like,
but to me, it was like Caudron was just killed this old guy. And then his asshole brother gets killed with good reason. Mm-hmm. And then he's all pissed off. Oh, you killed my brother. I'm like, well, you just killed someone's grandpa.
You just killed my grandpa, dickhead.
But yes, I remember you talking about that when we were
covering
the episode, the Merle of it.
Yeah, the Merle of it all.
I wrote a few notes after a while in the rewatch, skipping to now. I got to say, Norman Reedus looks a lot older.
Yep.
As do we all.
Isn't it weird? I was thinking the same about Rick. Someone posted a video or something of like Andrew Lincoln through the years, and I'm like, damn, we're all aging.
I love the intro still. I watched
still
it
so good. The music's
every
amazing.
Time. I never skipped through it when I was binging yesterday. What else?
Oh,
any other notes?
Clemence Posey is wonderful. She's so good throughout this whole show. And you know what? Laurent is entertaining. I know I gave him shit for being a precocious young boy. And I can't wait to see if in Spain they have like a, I don't know, Jose or something who joins the crew or whatever. But it's an interesting...
he's still in it, and his story's not done yet. You know,
it's not done. No.
Like, people are saying, I think it was Alma. She's like, I'm so tired of this Messiah story, and I can't blame anyone who's tired of it, but it ain't over.
No,
we haven't seen him become the Messiah yet. You know, yes or no, we haven't yet got confirmation on that.
Yeah, the whole aesthetic of this episode is just brilliant. They do such a good job of establishing we're not in Kansas anymore or Georgia anymore.
It's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. I love the Abbey. Like, it's in my past life as an academic, my specialism was the medieval period. So I love, like, the setting that in which he finds himself, and the way in which they render it as being quite sinister when he first wakes up and the nuns are all, I don't know, a bit creepy and no one's quite sure what's happening.
He's like in pain because he got grabbed by the acid zombie, and she's like cauterizing the wound and he's screaming, and you have the nuns outside doing their chanting or something.
Yeah.
And the head nun is leading them, and they turn to hear the, oh my God, somebody screaming. She's like, no, pay attention. Continue with the song.
Yeah. And Père Jean, is that the zombie locked up? I like that because, like, there's this tradition in medieval churches where, an anchoress, which would be like a female spiritual person. I'm describing this really poorly. Can you tell I have a PhD in this? Would get, like, basically bricked into the side of a church, and they would just live this very solitary life, and people would come and, like, ask for advice and stuff. But they would essentially just live and die in that space.
So crazy.
And I was thinking about that.
You isolate someone. Completely cut them off from all of life, and then you go to them for advice.
And, like, they would be there, like, it's the kind of women who would, like, wear hair shirts or, like, self-flagellate. Or there's a really good book, actually, by Robin Cadwallader, I think it is, called The Anchoress, which, like, is a very vivid description of that. But I liked the kind of inversion of that trope with having an undead priest in a similar kind of locked-in setup. And the real devastation when he is killed by Caudron and his men, and Laurent really not coping with him.
Yeah, Laurent was devastated. And I just love, they all have this respect for the guy, for keeping him there. You know, it's like Herschel and his family in the barn, or the governor and Penny. They're just hoping that someday, like, God will bring him back or something. Yeah. And so they're speaking with all this reverence, and whenever they show him, he's like,
he's like, <"Bleh."> and they're like, Père Jean
is so good. But the beauty of the series is one of my favorite things about it. And it's so, like, hearing Daryl goes to France just seems so stupid at first, and it turned out to be so delightful. And sometimes crazy ideas like that, just, they can be the best because you're just going into it with abandon and love, you know. I think it's because Norman Reedus loves Paris and everything. And I know some people didn't like the show or didn't like it as much as we do, but I really loved it. And watching it again last night, I felt the same way. And in between, like, at some point after season one aired, in, I think, the Zedhead group, we were just ranking the spinoffs and the main series, you know. And I know I put The Walking Dead proper first, but I put Daryl second. That's my second favorite of all the Walking Dead shows.
I think for me, toss up between Daryl and The Ones Who Live, but I think in terms of the actual quality
I would put The Ones Who Live second and Daryl third. Sorry.
I think it would be close, though, because I think the Daryl, I forgave a lot in The Ones Who Live because I was just so psyched to have it. Whereas the Daryl show, I wasn't as psyched about it. I was just like, okay, Daryl's in France. And it really grew on me, and I really enjoyed it in a surprising way. So I feel like I would have to revisit that, but they're definitely very close.
For me, I mean, there was a lot to forgive in The Ones Who Live too, but there was a lot that just totally kicked ass, and it was so much more intense, you know?
Yeah.
So, but 100%. But they're right together for me too.
Yeah.
Anyway, let me see. I think I had a couple more notes. So Daryl's in the bath, and Isabel notices the scars, which we just saw for the first time in the rewatch.
Yes. Oh my God, we've timed this quite well.
Merle, for people who are just jumping on with the spinoffs, we've been doing a Walking Dead rewatch. We're coming up on a year, by the way. October will be a year that we've been doing that.
of our rewatch. Holy shit. Yeah. I thought it was like, I mean, 6 months or something.
We
I was
broke like, yeah. for the spinoffs, but yeah, we started Halloween last year. anyway, so you should join us for that. It's been a ton of fun.
It's genuinely super fun. We just did Clear, which was just amazing to go back to.
The Morgan.
Yeah. I'm kind of psyched to see where we go next.
All right. Shall I move on?
Yes.
Okay. Season 1, episode 2, Alouette. During the initial outbreak, Isabelle, a drug addict and thief, escapes from Paris with her boyfriend Quinn and her pregnant sister Lily. She ultimately abandons Quinn. I gotta say, these entries, I feel like they were probably all written by the same person, and I think they're very well written.
Oh, I'll have to find out which editor it was and give them a Wiki Barn star.
Lily dies and gives birth as a walker to Laurent via emergency C-section. Bah! In the present, the group loses their mule and are captured by a group of children living in their old preschool with their dying teacher, Madame Dubois. Laurent makes friends with the children, who tell him the nuns are lying to him. They told him they were lying to him about his father, who he thought was this French freedom fighter that went off to fight the Hungries and be a hero. But it turns out he's this low life douchebag.
Adam Nagaitis.
Super hot. Laurent makes friends with needing a horse, Daryl offers to get medicine for Dubois if one of the children, Lou, helps him raid a nearby castle owned by a man dubbed La Tarasque. Inside, Daryl confronts the man, revealed as a totally stereotypical American from Texas named RJ Gaines, and rescues a boy he has captured. Gaines falls into his own walker moat and is devoured, screaming, "I'm an American!" While the kids rescue Daryl. Meanwhile, Dubois has died, and Daryl encourages Lou to step up as their leader. Daryl's party leaves, but Laurent expresses frustration over secrets kept from him. Caudron returns to the abbey, where he finds Daryl's recorded message, a picture of Laurent and a map of the group's route to Paris.
Ooh. Well, I think this episode has one of the best scenes in all of the Walking Dead universe in the cold open.
Yes, the Paris, right as the apocalypse is happening.
So good.
She's in the swanky club pretending to hit on guys while she's stealing their watches and wallets.
Is it Blue Monday?
And she goes out and you just see people starting to act crazy. But my favorite is when she's in the subway waiting and then the train just slowly passes and everybody's eating each other on the subway.
So good. And it's all just like so well. Oh, it's so good. It's so. Peter started talking about this in the car the other day. He's like, "I was just thinking about that scene," and I'm like, "Yeah, it's bloody brilliant.
It's so really good." And it's definitely my favorite of the as the apocalypse is going down scenes that we've seen in the series, including anything we saw in Fear, which was also great. Those early Fear, the Walking Dead episodes, but also a couple of times in the Walking Dead when they've flashed back to. Things a little bit earlier, but this one I really loved.
Oh, and it gives you such insight into who Isabelle is and where she got to, and it plants the seeds of Quinn and Lily's betrayal, and it's Laurent's origin story. It introduces Quinn, who's just a great sleaze, Adam Nagaitis. Mm-hmm. I'm sad he won't be back for season two. Like, I'm sad that he got killed off, because I thought he was a real highlight of this season. His character, I thought Quinn was fascinating and really well played.
You and Jennifer McGinley.
Yeah, me and Jennifer McGinley.
Jennifer.
Hey, Jennifer.
I loved when Father, like, they told these kids that Daryl was a priest.
Oh, yeah.
So they would be more comfortable. So then they ask him to say grace, and you think it's going to be a disaster, but he ends up saying something really poignant and straightforward. And, another sort of great timing thing is we just had that scene in The Walking Dead where Merle and Herschel are together, and Herschel starts reading a Bible verse and Merle finishes it for him. And it makes, I mean, in a later episode, Daryl says they kicked him out of Sunday school. So it makes you feel like Merle and Daryl had a bit of a religious upbringing for a while, at least, you know.
And we know they watched Mork and Mindy.
Yes, I love that so much.
So good.
I used to watch that as a kid. And then, as you said, we see Laurent born from his zombie mother, which we thought had some parallels to The Last of Us, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember if this was in the series, the Daryl series or not, but that maybe they're speculating Laurent could be immune because of the way he was born.
I think possibly. I think as well, I feel like we did this so soon after The Last of Us as well. It was really fresh at the time, which is unfortunate for AMC, but great for us.
Yeah. I know. And then, yeah, just that it's his mother is Isabel's sister, and that Isabel kind of became a nun, at least in part, just because they'd gone to that convent seeking mm-hmm. refuge, and she ended up just staying, apparently. That's kind of interesting.
I love that. I love when there's a character who's found religion in an unexpected way or has a kind of very real backstory. I think it's such mm-hmm. an interesting character trait to look into.
Yeah, like, I mean, I was a Jehovah's Witness for 2 years just because they came to my door and I was too nice to turn them away. And then I just started studying and was into it for 2 years and then decided, I'm not into this anymore.
Why do I feel like I've never heard this before, but also like I probably have and I've forgotten?
I don't know. I don't talk about it that much, but it was interesting.
I thought it was one of your jokes when you started. I was like, nah. And I'm like, oh, no, that's real. Okay, cool. No,
it really was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't. Yeah, I think the reason why I quit is because what I liked about it was they just tried to do a really good job of explaining real world things with mm-hmm. research. You know, they'd mm-hmm. have all these people just diving into. But when it came time, they like the people who were teaching me were sort of like, you know, you haven't like really seemed that into going around door to door with us. And I was thinking about it like, yeah, I'm really not. So that really says something. And that's why I'm going to leave.
But sometimes the difference between like living a religious life and holding it very dear to yourself. But I think there is a fine line when you start to proselytize. Like I find that's quite an interesting thing for me because I've friends of all faiths and none. And I'm always really, I'd like to think that I'm really open to hearing about it and talking about it, even though they might not be my belief. But it's when people start to push it, I think that's when tensions rise, is when you try.
I have an allergic reaction to it.
Yeah,
I really do.
You just barf on them. You're like, bleh.
Well, I try not to, but that's how I feel like I want
it's hard.
To. Oh, I don't want to.
I thought two episodes ago, Rachel Teal Edwards covered for me on the rewatch. Loved what she was saying about Bible study.
Absolutely.
And the stories that.
And she's so gentle Merle's about it all. About. You know?
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah, I think everyone should know a bit about the Bible. It's one of our biggest collections
Absolutely.
Of stories in the world.
Like, I was glad to have her on it because when, you know, it just so happened that it worked out for her to come on for that one. And then when I was watching it and seeing the religious references coming up, I was like, oh, this is perfect.
Yeah. No, it's brilliant. I struggled a lot during my degree, having not been brought up in a Bible household because I didn't get a lot of the references in the medieval texts. Mm. So, it's a really, I think, fruitful education to have, particularly in stories like this, where I think there's a lot of religious symbolism throughout the Daryl show and in the kind of environments that he's in Paris and in this amazing architecture. And
it's part of
Abbey
the story,
and,
I think, to see whether he will start becoming more religious too.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see. Mm-hmm.
But I grew up in a church-going household, and I never listened, so I would have been just like you if I'd gone down that route.
Literally, like, something, I don't know, resurrection, maybe, question mark? Something,
yeah, like,
yeah.
All right, shall we move on to three, or did you have any more notes about number two?
No, this is great. Episode three, season one, episode three, Paris sera toujours Paris, which I think is Paris... Today, Paris forever? Paris always?
Paris will always be Paris.
Paris will always be Paris. After a brief stop in Angers, including a bizarre zombie orchestra performing Bolero, I remember that, that was great, Daryl's group finally reaches Paris. There, after a poignant encounter with a little girl, now a zombie, who used to be Isabelle's neighbour, they meet a community led by a man named Falou. Oh, Falou! I loved him.
Yeah.
With their help, Daryl seeks out information on a ship that can return him to America, which leads the group to the Demimonde nightclub and a reunion with Isabel's ex-boyfriend, Quinn. Quinn reveals that he is Laurent's father and determines that Isabel and Laurent stay with him in exchange for his help. Daryl rejects the deal and prepares to set out on his own after an argument with Isabel, leading to Laurent running away after overhearing them. Quadron meets with Jeanne, who agrees to let him lead the search for Daryl while her people continue experimenting with walkers. Beauvoir attacks Valou's community and Isabel searches for Laurent, while Daryl falls through a roof following a brutal fight with Quadron. Yes, he fell into water, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But we didn't know that until the next episode.
No.
We just saw him fall and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Just sink through the roof. But do you remember when they were experimenting on that zombie? Quadron went to talk to Jeanne and she just sort of like, well, I have to attend to something, and brings him into this room where there's scientists with this zombie and it was chained up and it was going, ah!
Yes!
And then it broke free and slammed against the glass,
so,
and then
creepy.
Its head like exploded.
It exploded.
He's like, oh, 16 seconds. Back to the drawing board.
Oh, and I loved the Demi Moore nightclub as well.
Yes.
Brilliant.
That whole part of it made this my favorite episode, because the idea is that this sort of lifeblood, this artistic spirit of Paris and sort of alt, sort of, I don't know, nightclub lifestyle kept going throughout the apocalypse. I just loved it.
And we saw Jim Morrison's grave. They go to Père Lachaise. Père Lachaise.
Yeah, and Daryl happens to notice it, which I thought was a bit unrealistic, because you really have to know where it is to find it. And also, Père Lachaise is like at the northeastern corner of Paris, I think. And I'm like, they were coming from the south. How did they get up there? But anyway, it was a beautiful location.
It was Paris, so baby.
Shut up. Yeah.
Paris. Someone wrote an amazing article as well. I need to find it, about Daryl Dixon and queer spaces and being in nightclubs with people who are kind of bohemian and esoteric and not necessarily heteronormative.
Mainstream.
And I thought that was really interesting, because that's definitely, I feel like, a bit of Norman Reedus in his kind of artistic life. But it was also interesting for a character who's been quite desexualized in the show to be in a space like that with people who are living alternative lifestyles. So yeah, find that interesting.
Yeah, like he's there because they tell him Isabel's people that they meet up with in Paris tell him this is a place where deals are made, so mm-hmm. if you come, we can try to find a way to get you on a ship to go back home. This mm-hmm. is kind of like the cantina scene in Star Wars, you know, where they go to get a ship. Maybe that's what they were kind of thinking of, you know, they find Han Solo there. But anyways, so he's kind of on a mission, and I didn't really look closely to see how he appreciates this space.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does he care? Although he did stare at a piece of art for a while, I think, like an impressionistic piece of art, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he had that much of a reaction towards the rest of it. He was just sort of on his mission. But I think Daryl's kind of a live and let live type person.
Oh, definitely.
For the most part, right?
Definitely now. I think that's the evolution we see in the main show, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. A few notes about this one. Isabel, she goes to her flat to get some drugs to trade for whatever mm-hmm. Daryl's hoping to find at this club. And while she's there, she gets a picture of her sister to give to Laurent, because it's his mom. And that's the first time he's ever seen his mom. And that reminded me of what Michonne just did for Carl. Got the picture of Carl and Lori and Rick so they could show it to Judith at some point.
And he then has this fascination with the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And the woman, I forgot her name, but Quinn's girlfriend gives Laurent her Eiffel Tower necklace or something that
she
noticed.
Does.
And that she seems to be the one that realizes that's where he went later on, and tells Quinn, who goes after him.
Yeah. She's not all bad. She's still alive.
No.
Do we know if she's dead?
I think so, because by the end she has betrayed Quinn with good reason, because he just sort of was like, oh, Isabel's back, I want her now.
Isabel's back, fuck you, man.
Yeah, like, absolutely. And getting her to help him get Isabel back, like be his minion all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
And she says at one point, you need to give a woman a good reason to come to you, but you also need to give her a damn good reason to stay, or something like that.
I love her. She's like whimsical, sexy Parisian lady who's like, I take a shit. Yeah. And you're like, yep, go for it. I don't want to be a stepmother to this. Like,
she's the reason why Quinn gets captured by Janae. I think she gave Janae some information or something like that. And then Quinn had to fight Daryl at the end. But anyway, what else?
For this episode, I just loved, I loved the ambiance. I loved the nightclub. I love being in Paris. Paris is fucking magical.
Yeah, I know. Like, I like Spain, but I'm a little bit bummed that we're leaving Paris, but at least we get one more season in Paris. Mm-hmm. And it will be great to see the, like, Gaudi architecture in Spain. And
yeah,
I've never been to Madrid, so it'll be fun to
see. I've never been to Madrid, and I really want to go because one of my bucket list items is to see Guernica, the Pablo Picasso painting in real life. That's on my bucket list. So I want to do that. I'm just telling everyone out there for accountability. That's something I want to do. Yeah, I think Spain will pop on screen, but there's something about Paris that's just like nowhere else in the world.
Yeah. And plus, we're not good at French, but we're better at French than we are at Spanish, I think.
Oh, God.
We're not even going to
confirm. Can confirm.
So I for some reason, had it in my notes to talk about Laurent here. And watching it last night, because I just had it in my head, Laurent's pretty annoying. Mm. And watching it last night, I realized that the reason why I have that in my head is because I hear it from other people. But I don't
find
that.
Don't look at me.
That.
Don't
it's
look
not
at
just
me.
You. It is you, but it's not just you. it's a lot of people and fans and stuff. And that's fine. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But I just want to say that I think he's great. He's a good kid. He's bright, polite, curious, sensitive,
great hair,
perceptive with people. He's compassionate, you know, and he's not perfect either, which is good because then it would be too precocious or whatever. But he's sometimes he makes mistakes and has failings, emotional failings or whatever, but that makes him human. And so, like, some people would criticize him, oh, you're too perfect, you're just this little perfect thing, and then he'd make a mistake, oh, you fucked up, didn't you? But anyway, I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about
others. Is he better than Judith?
I like, mean,
why go out for burgers when you've got steak at home?
Judith is more perfect. Yeah. So he's less perfect than her. But yeah,
I mean, we're not even talking about RJ here. We're just like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Well, RJ is just played by this little, like, he was a toddler, right?
Oh, he was tiny. He came on. He's very cute. I watched the ending of The Ones Who Live Again, and I was like, oh, he's quite sweet.
Yeah, he's adorable. But I think in this kid that plays Laurent, Louis,
he's
I don't
good.
Know his name, Pooch Sigsigly.
Louis Pooch Sigsigly.
Sigsigly. Oh, God. I got to figure out how to say that. But anyway, I think he's really good. He's so contemplative and natural. And, you know, I do agree that this story of a gruff older man having to sort of escort this young innocent person is pretty played out, I guess.
I mean, it's our podcast every week. I'm super young.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I thought you meant the other way around. No, I'm just kidding. but you know, then again, you could say, oh, what about a story where a man loves a woman? You know, that's played out, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, I just think, and also the parts that where he can seem kind of annoying is when he just starts spouting facts, you know. And but the way that this kid, whose name I won't try to pronounce again, plays it, he's not like trying to brag about knowing things. Nope. He, like, when he says, one time I walked backwards for a whole month or something like that.
Yeah.
He reminds me of my son, Bodie, who's 7 and just loves to talk about what he's doing. And he wants approval for things that he's good at, but also just a way of sharing and being social. And he doesn't understand that it can come off as bragging or that no one really cares right now, you know, which I never say that to him, but I could see that being the case sometimes and like that. So this kid just reminds me of a lot of kids in that way.
I feel like you learn a lot more about Laurent when you see how coddled he's been by the people around him as well. That's one of the reasons I liked the episode with the other kids, is you're suddenly like, this kid is so underprepared for the world around him. Like, he's so smart and he's been so cultivated in some ways, and then in other ways he's just so unprepared for what's about to happen. And that
he doesn't even want to eat a fish when they go out.
He's like,
Daryl has to tell him sometimes you have to do things you don't want to do. And so Daryl's parenting him. And then he develops this, he just adores Daryl, looks up to him, which is another thing I find really endearing about him, because of course a little kid would be impressed with a guy like Daryl in a world like this, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Talk about like a kind of male role model when your only other male role model has been a zombie that you keep locked in a like bloody appendage to the Abbey, who's just like, bleh. Like, I think, yeah, you'd be pretty right. smitten with Daryl, I think, at that point.
Right. But one thing about him that I kind of worry about is, you know, we ended season one on a cliffhanger where Daryl was about to go get on this boat to go home, and then you have Laurent, Daryl, who followed him out here. And I don't know if we realize this in the moment, but they play that song, "It Takes a Second to Say Goodbye" by U2, yeah. you know?
Yeah.
And when I was watching it this time, the way I heard that was, Daryl, it just takes a second to say goodbye. If you would have just said goodbye, then he wouldn't have followed you out here. Because
yep.
Daryl left in the middle of the night when he was sleeping. So it's mm-hmm. kind of Daryl's fault in a way. I don't know, maybe not. That's a stretch. But anyway, we left on this cliffhanger, and now we're coming back a second later, I'm sure, in the series, but a year later for this kid. So mm-hmm. he's going to look a head taller, I feel.
They're
like,
gonna recast
his voice
him.
Is gonna be like this.
He's gonna be recast as Timothy Chalamet. They're just gonna be like, oh, it's a completely
it's
different
gonna be
person.
The Carl syndrome all over again.
Yeah.
You know?
Derek, come back.
Yeah. Oh, I love you, Daryl.
I just think the conclusion of all of this is going to be like, if Daryl goes back to the Commonwealth, Judith and RJ essentially have to live with their fucking weird French pen pal for the rest of eternity in the Commonwealth. Daryl's like, I brought you a new sibling.
Oh, wait. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, if they bring Laurent back, Judith's going to be like, who's this? Why does he live with us now?
Why does he keep bragging about how good he is at Rubik's Cube?
Yeah, no one thinks that's cool. Judith's like gutting a fish or something, and he's like, Judith, have you ever played with Rubik's Cube? She's like, no.
But honestly, I think the two of them would get along great. I think Judith would be fascinated by Laurent, you know?
Yeah. RJ would probably stab him, though. No, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know RJ's life.
I don't want competition.
Mama! I want food!
Okay. Should we move on to the next one?
Yes.
That would be season one, episode four, La Dame de Fer, which is what they call the Eiffel Tower, the Lady mm-hmm. of Iron. Janae begins a search for Laurent, seeking to eliminate him as he's a symbol of hope to the people. She hates that. As part of this, Janae makes a deal with Quinn, who seeks Laurent in order to get Isabel back. After escaping from a flooded building and having a dream that a praying Laurent is ignored by a mob of walkers, Daryl encounters Antoine, who is killed by guerriers, but he helps the dying man to free his pigeons. Reuniting with Isabel, Daryl tracks Laurent to the ruins of the Eiffel Tower, where the boy nearly falls victim to a herd.
Mm.
When they're sitting, I noticed the Eiffel Tower. I don't remember if we noticed this before, but when Laurent approaches the Eiffel Tower, and you look up and it looks like a plane or something or a bomb has hit the top because it's all frayed.
Yeah.
And then there's wind blowing and then the whole thing is groaning in the wind.
Oh, the sound is amazing.
And it's like it's going to fall over, like it's straining, you know. Mm-hmm. It made me feel a little bit like, oh, God, you should probably not be standing there. That thing's going to fall on you, kid.
Yeah. It's like moaning almost. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's good. Good effects. Goes on. During the rescue, Laurent is kidnapped by Quinn's men and taken to Demi-Monde. With the help of a captive whom he tortures and later abandons to walkers, Daryl sneaks into the nightclub and rescues Laurent while Falou and his people create a distraction. Daryl overpowers Quinn while Anna, that's the Quinn's girlfriend, disgruntled by Quinn's obsession with Isabel, lets them go. Having fallen in love with Emile, Sylvie decides to stay in Paris with him while Isabel decides to stay in order to get Quinn to help
secure
Daryl and Laurent passage out.
That whole side story. The
Janae
other nun.
The city down.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sylvie, yeah.
Oh, she was cute.
And this dapper rebel who told him,
very
he
dapper.
Said something about his rebel grandma told him two things. One was something like, always never give up or something, and then how to dance, and then she like he like twirls her while he's saying it.
It's like I'm in the scene.
I just said them details.
Two things, like something and then another
something
thing.
Something important and then
I don't know. Something good and then something not good. I don't know. Something.
It seems like I should be writing Wikipedia articles. No, just kidding. Daryl and Laurent leave Paris on a boat heading to the Nest, the Union's main base.
Mm.
So what do you remember? Anything in particular about this one? Sylvie?
You've got me thinking about Sylvie and her sexy renegade man now.
Who basically convinces her to stop being a nun.
I remember really vividly them leaving on the boat and leaving without Isabel, in this kind of sense of the two of them being just on their own. Daryl torturing. That was something we spoke about a lot on the podcast, was the way Daryl was torturing that guy.
Just stabbing him. While he's telling the story of little Jimmy, whose dad asked him or told him to kill the pig out back, and Jimmy decided to just stab him a little bit so he wouldn't actually have to kill him, but it made the pig suffer more. And he's stabbing this guy over and over again while he's giving this like Batman villain like speech.
Yep.
And it's like, yep, this seems
it was
wrong.
Weird. and
it.
The man with
like
the
that
pigeons, he was so sweet. He was like something out of a proper little French alternative movie. And yeah, I was sad about his pigeons.
It felt like a little French film there, like a little short film, because there Daryl and him are in the road talking, and he's got his cart with his pigeons in the cage. Mm-hmm. And then Daryl hears somebody coming down the road, and he's like, come on, we got to go to the side. And the guy's like, I don't want to leave my pigeons. He's like, come on, you got to get out of here. So they hide behind this like obstruction, and then the bad guys come, and they immediately see this cart of pigeons, and they grab it, and they take it into their car, and the old man comes like waddling out, no, and Daryl's like, no. So Daryl waits to see, right? And then they're like, he's like, I need the pigeons, and they shoot him, and then Daryl comes out and kills them all. And then the guy's laying there dying, and he goes, let my pigeons free.
Let my children fly.
So Daryl lets them go.
It's great. It was so good. And I think as well with this episode, I really enjoyed, my brain is like trying to bring me back to this. These different sides to everyone, the decision that Isabel makes to stay surprised me. Then of course we've got this vision that Daryl has of Laurent being ignored by the walkers. It's very, I don't know, there's a lot of atmosphere in this.
Because we didn't know that was a dream at first, so it seemed a little bit like, oh wait, Laurent, is he the Messiah? Something weird is happening here. Oh wait, it's just Daryl drowning. And then we had the scene when you figure out that it's Daryl underwater, and then he like stabs a couple of zombies underwater, and you see their blood come out into the water. It was pretty artistically cool.
Yeah, it's very, very awesome.
And then the thing, Quinn, we're trying to figure out where Quinn is coming from here, and he kidnaps Laurent in order to draw Isabel to him, and he's ignoring his girlfriend Anna. So it's like, I guess he just loves Isabel, and that's what he's, you know, trying to, well, love, quote unquote. He's trying to like capture her for himself, and he's wanting to be a father to Laurent with Isabel at his side. It sort of reminded me of the governor with Penny and Andrea, because he's just trying to force this situation where nobody involved wants to be in the situation, you know?
Yeah. And this kind of obsession with Isabel because he can't have her. And just that way in which she's pulled away from him, he can't live
with
that. He can't deal with it. Yeah, he can't deal with that rejection. It's very believable.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if we talked about that, but he collects art and whiskey and probably a bunch of different things. And I think that mindset is similar to the way he looks at Isabel.
Yeah.
A possession
who he's lost and wants to get back desperately, but she doesn't want to come back, mate.
All right, should we move on?
Yes. Way.
Maybe.
Series 1, episode 5, Deux Amours. Oh, this is where we find out some backstory. So in Maine, Daryl helps to capture walkers in exchange for fuel he needs to get home. He briefly makes contact with Carol, who tells him someone has come back. After Juno murders a young man whom Daryl was mentoring, an altercation between the two causes them to be put on the Pouvoir ship. The two work together to escape, but Juno is torn apart by one of Pouvoir's test subjects, who displays enhanced abilities similar to multiple variants. In the present, Isabel struggles to adjust being with Quinn again, even considering killing him with a knife, and receives a hidden message from Sylvie, Falou, and Emile. Isabel agrees to join a Pouvoir celebration with Quinn, only to have a jealous Anna betray them. Daryl, Laurent, and Aslan continue their journey to the nest, but Aslan is killed during a fight with several walkers. Before dying, he reveals that the nest is at Mont Saint-Michel, but Laurent cuts a rope and lets their boat float off, wishing to go to America with Daryl instead. The two
That was the most annoying thing he did, I gotta
that
say.
That truly was very fucking annoying.
Yeah.
The two and Quinn are captured by guerrières, and Genet coerces Laurent into making a show of support at an event she holds, where Genet pits Daryl in a gladiator fight against one of her enhanced walkers, unaware that Sylvie, Falou, and Emile have infiltrated the event. A lot happens in that episode.
Yeah. Yeah, so the whole backstory with Daryl meeting this gang who's capturing walkers... He doesn't know why. It's because Genet's people have come there to get walkers for some reason to bring over for experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's this young guy who's giving them walkers in exchange for fuel. And this one young guy says that his girlfriend, he wants to get her away from her father, her evil father or something, but he has to come back with fuel, and he's very inept. He's not able to capture a walker. He's trying to get Daryl to help him. Everybody's making fun of him, all the other guys. Mm-hmm. And then you see they bring him back as a walker, this young guy, and Daryl deduces that they killed him.
Yeah.
To do it. And then Daryl starts trouble and fights the guy, and that's why they say the rules are no fighting, so now we're taking you on our ship as, I don't know why, part of this whole experimentation or something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they were going to make him a walker too. I think they were going to throw him in a pit of walkers on the ship.
We're still a bit vague about what's going on there, aren't we? Yeah, but...
Yeah, I mean, they're injecting them with this stuff that makes them very aggressive and strong. And they use those walkers in the... arena fight at the end against Daryl and Quinn. So maybe it's just a fighting force. Janae wants them as a fighting force, but I don't know if we know that for sure. Yeah.
It feels like there's still questions to be answered there.
Yeah.
But we'll figure it out.
But we get Daryl calling Carol on the radio here because he gets to a radio. And this is where she says, came back. And then she fades out, and I swear I gotta listen to it again, but this time I thought you could hear the end of the word Rick. It came back. Yeah. But I don't know for sure, but
well,
I think
we know it could happen.
That's
now
probably what she was saying.
Yeah, because do we know, was there any, so we know that there was a whole thing with the world beyond was supposed to come out after The Ones Who Live or something like that. Was there ever any mix up between the two, or was it always supposed to be in this order? For The Ones Who Live in Daryl.
What two? Oh, I think we know that Daryl, I'm pretty sure we figured out the timeline that Rick would have been back.
Yeah.
At this time. But
that would motivate him to come back, I think.
Yeah, because I think Ones Who Live ends before we see, oh God, I don't remember the timeline anymore. But I think we figured it out that she was probably talking about Rick.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
There was a scene on this ship when Daryl's causing mayhem, right? They try to throw him into this walker pit, and he ends up throwing the two guys that are trying to push him in. He throws them in instead. And then he goes in, and there's all these like cells. It's like a prison ship or something. He's filled with zombies, and he lets them out, and there's explosions and everything. And right as he's about to like go get on a lifeboat or something, there's one of those super powerful zombies there, and he and this other guy are fighting it. And it was just such a great scene.
I feel like none, a criticism I have of all of the spin-offs so far is that we really haven't gone into the variants. Like, none of the shows have really gone into, like, what they are and what they do. Like, they, I think it was hinted at, I think this one more than others, but I've just felt a bit like that was something that was really teased in the end of the main show, and we haven't really, hasn't really kind of been a main plot point yet, and I want to know more about them.
Yeah, I mean, my guess is the main point of the variants is because they wanted to make the show more thrilling. Mm-hmm. How can we make it? Because the zombies are dumb and slow. How do we make them feel like more of a threat? You know, mm-hmm. let's make some fast, strong, aggressive ones that can grab things and whatever. And then we'll figure out where they came from later, or maybe they know, but that's not the main point. Is I don't think the main point necessarily is to introduce this new storyline where we explore the origins and the variations of the zombies as much as it is to make more thrills. But then you have to do that other part too, though, right? You can't.
Yeah,
just...
I would just like to know a bit more about them. I'm just like, come on, let's have a bit more of this.
Yep.
Aslan was also great.
Yeah, that's right. Except his death was very dumb because we just see him, like, they go to camp, mm-hmm. Aslan and Daryl and Laurent, and then it's just like some growling that you don't see, and then all of a sudden he's like stuck to a telephone post with bites on it.
I have been bitten.
Yeah. And it's this guy who's clearly had this amazing life and has survived through the apocalypse, and now he has this sort of uneventful death. So he just felt like a tool, you know, but he was good.
Amazing life until he met Laurent, and now he's dead. So saying.
Laurent has that Rick factor.
He does. He's a little tiny French Rick.
All right. Final one?
Yeah.
Season 1, Episode 6, Coming Home. Coming Home. After Daryl kills the walker.
Oh, Daryl and Quinn are Merle and Darling it.
Oh. Daryl, oh yeah, the one at the arena, yeah. Mm-hmm. Daryl and Quinn chained together, kill several enhanced walkers. What?
I forgot to say in the last episode, sorry. This is going to really wreck the flow of it. I loved the, like, Nazi Germany-style get-together they went to, where everyone's dressed up all 1930s-style for this, like, Pouvoir event. I thought the aesthetics of that were brilliant, and it kind of continues into this scene where people are sort of baying for blood, and there's flags and things. Yeah,
screaming, I thought it was very cool. And they're like, yeah, they want the zombies to succeed. It's a bit like Rocky IV when Rocky goes to Russia. You know, they want the zombies to succeed. But then when Daryl defeats the Zeds, Daryl and Quint, then they're all going, dig zone, dig zone.
Yes. Like there's like a bit of a turn there, isn't there? Because they're suddenly like,
Just fair weather fans, basically.
It's great. Right. They're just slutty. They're slutty fans. What can we say?
So after Daryl kills the walker, Daryl and Quinn chained together kill several enhanced walkers in a badass fight
arena.
Yeah, it's so good because they hate each other, but they make a great team. Mm-hmm. Before Falou kills the guerrière Genet ordered to shoot them. In the chaos that follows, the group escapes with a bitten Quinn sacrificing himself to buy Daryl time. And he like asks Daryl to chop off his hand so they can get free of the restraints. Mm-hmm. And then he's going to go back and distract the people chasing them so Daryl can get away. But he says, can you make sure to tell Sylvia I did this? Or I mean, tell Isabel I did this.
Yep. Yeah, which is just such a like weak but also perfect thing for him to say. Make sure she knows.
It's kind of sweet because he's about to die anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right. But you're right. It's kind of weak too.
I think you're right. It's weak and sweet. It's very him, mm-hmm. I think. It's like, make sure she knows, because you would want to make sure. You'd be like, God, imagine if I do this and no one appreciates it. But at the same time, you can't imagine like a real hero like Daryl doing something like that.
Yeah, no way. Never. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Quinn reanimates, forcing Laurent to put his biological father down with Daryl's encouragement. That was the other sort of annoying moment, because zombie Quinn is just on Isabel. You know, she's trying to hold him off, and he's and Daryl's behind a gate, so he can't get through. And he hands Laurent an axe and is like, go ahead and kill him. And Laurent's like, I don't want to. And he's like, come on, God will forgive you. Do it. She's going to die.
It's just such a good, God will forgive you. Will he? It doesn't matter. Do it. Like,
just
oh,
do
no.
it. I won't forgive you if you don't.
Yeah.
So after going their separate ways from Falou and Emile, Daryl's group resumes journeying towards Mont-Saint-Michel, but are attacked by Genet's men. Unable to kill a child, Caudron shoots the other guerriers instead, promising to get revenge on Daryl later.
I mean, he's not going to. Like, I said I was going to go to the gym later, and I've not done it. So, like,
yeah, you should just do it in the moment. Come on. You already shot six guys. What's one more? upon his return, Genet deduces Caudron's betrayal and has him tortured for information. Daryl's group finally reaches the nest where they settle in. Daryl becomes conflicted when staying in between staying in France and returning to America. Union of Hope leader Lo Sang arranges passage to Newfoundland for Daryl, who chooses to leave despite Isabelle's comparing his abandoning Laurent to Daryl's abandonment by his own father. They were just laying it on so thick with Daryl.
Oh, they really were.
I don't care that you have a family. You should stay here with us.
Yeah, we are your family.
We have
now.
1,000 people here. Yeah. At the Normandy American Cemetery and Memorial Day and Memorial, Daryl visits the grave of his grandfather, William T. Dixon, who died on D-Day. On Omaha Beach, Daryl prepares to board a boat, but hesitates when he sees Laurent secretly followed him and has a herd of walkers closing in on him. Near Freeport, Maine, Carol searches for Daryl, finding his motorcycle. After Carol captures its hostile rider, he directs Carol to where he found it. And then she leaves him in the trunk and says, if you're lying, I'm not coming back, or something like that.
We also get that cool, it opens, does it not, with a flashback of William Dixon.
Will she come back to see to get the guy from the trunk, or is he just in the trunk forever now?
I think he might be in the trunk forever.
Oh my God.
I think that's where he
that's
lives now.
That's pretty harsh, man. I'd rather just die.
It's Carol,
you're gonna lock
though,
me in the
it?
Trunk in the apocalypse. Kill me first.
Yeah.
yeah. We saw a flashback of Daryl's grandpa in D-Day, and the whole point of that. Daryl talks a few times about like they're trying to get him to stay, and he's like. Comparing it to the wars where people go off and fight for someone else's cause and then they die and then their whole family suffers. Like his grandpa went off and got killed and then his family suffered because of that. And he doesn't want to be like that for his family back home.
I mean, excellent points all, to be honest.
Yeah. Like, but like, European vacation, so.
Yeah, but also Madrid.
The arena fight was so, well, we already talked about it, but
it was amazing.
That was awesome.
It was really great. I loved Mont-Saint-Michel. I loved the whole community there. It was so magical. You'd think it was made up, but it's a real place. And it was just so cool.
I got to go there now. When I was in Scotland, I was like, can I get down there? But
I know Peter and I had the same thing. We're like, we could be, I don't know. Did Chris Fairhurst get there when he was over in France?
I think he might have. Yeah. I got to ask him about that.
Yeah. We'll have to get him on to talk about it. Cause it sounds amazing.
It'd be cool.
Yeah.
The whole, Pouvoir de Vivant, that's Genet's group, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was sort of, not that interested. She gave a whole speech during the arena that laid out what her vision is and what she's trying to do. And I just kind of ignored it. So I got to get back into that. But they're sort of like the CRM. She's saying things like, we have to do the hard, unspeakable things now so that they won't have to. And she doesn't like hope or religion or anything. She's like very pragmatic and practical and okay with cruelty if it helps the mission and stuff like that. But she's like the main power in France, it seems like. And I think she's going to be the villain going forward, which is why I'm bothering to talk about her.
She's formidable. Hold me down. But she is formidable. Hold me down. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
She kind of reminds me just of a young Nancy Pelosi in a way.
Ooh, I like that.
Not trying to make any political statement there, but just her vibe.
Powerful women. We love to see it.
And then... with Carol, seeing her with this guy. So first, you see a guy on a motorcycle, you see this car, this like muscle car coming up behind him. And he shoots at the car And then it stops and he goes over and it's Carol inside. And after just coming off of The Walking Dead not too long before this series, you're like, Carol's a fucking badass. This guy better watch out. But watching, coming to it from watching the rewatch, I felt, I know Carol's a badass, but the feeling was a little different. It was like, oh man, I hope she's okay. Even though I know what happened.
Yeah.
I just, you feel differently about her, you know?
She's at a different stage in her development where we're at in the main show, isn't she? She's just not quite there yet. Yeah.
Yep.
It was a great finale and it did make me want more, which I think is very important.
Are you about to get it?
Oh, yes. It seems to have come quite quickly as well, because we've been quite spoiled because we had The Ones Who Live. We've been doing the rewatch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, because it's been about a year. So it's almost like normal TV back 20 years ago when things would come out every year.
Rather than every 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. So that's our catch up for Daryl season one.
Mm. Any predictions for season two?
Predictions? I have more hopes. Like, I kind of hope, as much as I was trying to stand up for Laurent, I'm not sure I want to see Laurent going to Spain. I want them to wrap up his story and have him stay with Isabel, probably, and have Carol and Daryl go off to Spain.
I mean,
right?
I love my girl Carol, but would you want your child near her for an extended period of time? That's all I'm saying.
Right.
For Laurent's own good.
Prediction. No, I'm just kidding.
It may be as good if Carol and Laurent are not in the same place for too long of a time. Just saying.
Yeah. That's so funny. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how those two relate.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, I just hope that it's as good as the first season. I don't really have any predictions. I just want them to move on to new things. I'd like for them to sort of wrap up stuff this season in a satisfying way and move on to new stories. But I suspect that maybe they'll wrap up with Laurent, but Janae will still be a factor going into Spain. What about you?
Yeah, I could see that. I think they might be heading towards a Daryl Isabel romance, which is interesting. So, yeah.
Right. And will Isabel go to Spain? See, I kind of think not for some reason. I bet you she dies by the end of this season.
I mean, again, would you want your girlfriend going near Daryl Dixon?
You might throw some fish at her. Then you'll know it's serious.
Threat to untold numbers of citizens.
The people it kills get up and kill.
Are they slow moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
This is a Walking Dead cast news update.
So there's an article on entertainmentweekly.com about all things Daryl getting ready for season two. There's a few interesting parts I marked down here. The article says, no character in the Walking Dead universe is harder to get closer to than Daryl, who locks his heart in a fortress more impenetrable than the sanctuary. And the actor playing him is just as fiercely protective of the people he allows into his character's inner circle. Witness this exchange between the star and showrunner. So David Zabel says, he's a showrunner, can I say that you love Laurent? Norman Reedus says, no. Zabel, you don't think he loves Laurent? No. Man, come on, Rita says. I don't think Daryl's so easy to love anybody. I think it's an earned thing. Zabel says, you don't think Laurent's earned it? Rita says, not like that. I think the same way that if I found a puppy in the rain and there was a bunch of traffic, I would probably get it out of the traffic. I don't know that I would fall in love with the puppy. I don't know the puppy yet. The puppy would have to earn my love. With that, Zabel can only laugh and shrug his shoulders. Hey, I tried. I knew I couldn't get away with it.
I love
that's
that.
Funny.
That's
and
amazing.
What I love, I mean, if we ever did get Reedus on again, I would want to ask him how much input he has. And I think this little exchange makes it pretty clear. It seems like he has final say, you know, on things. And then another interesting part, Melissa McBride's talking about Daryl and Carol. They are the only two left, says McBride, of the only remaining season one OG still on active Walking Dead duty. They were just so close in the beginning, and they have a very long, tight bond with each other, and it's been challenged so many times. And to tell this story that we're telling now is just beautiful to me all these years later. And then the article says, but the love between and for Daryl and Carol goes beyond mere longevity. There's a reason the duo connected and a reason why this platonic connection between two characters originally on the periphery became the most treasured in franchise history. Quote, when the show first started, it was all Rick, says Reedus. And then it was the Rick, Shane, Laurie triangle. So we were sort of in the background a bit, but our stories were so honest and people related to them. So I feel like the same awareness that we do about their characters, you know.
Definitely.
We talked about them in similar terms.
Yeah.
There's another part where David Zabel points out how they're connected because, similar that we've talked about, they've been empowered in the apocalypse. Like, the apocalypse has actually brought out better sides of their character, that they were both oppressed and then they became powerful and heroic. And Melissa McBride says, they have an interesting dichotomy. They kind of chafe each other, and then they have this incredible ease. They're patient with each other, and they're impatient with each other. She pauses and laughs, kind of like me and Norman. Greg Nicotero said, it always intrigues me when people complain about, well, season two, nothing happened. It was kind of slow. And my response to that always is, the reason that you love Daryl and the reason you love Carol is because season two took the time to create these characters. You see Carol broken, and Daryl steps up and makes this valiant effort to go save her. They're both broken people who find each other. I thought that was a good point. You know,
that's nice.
Point out.
I like that.
Because I'm down on season two sometimes. Reedus chafes a bit when asked about a possible Daryl and Isabel romance. Quote, I don't want to be so on the nose with the shipping and all that bullshit, which I hate. People like to couple people up. People like to say, ooh, romance. But it's bigger than that. It's bigger than just, are they a couple or not? Will they be a couple? Will they kiss? This is a guy who his entire young adult life has been running and fighting. That's all he's done. He's never had an opportunity to date or to go through those doors before. So wherever this ends up, just keep that in mind. And my question to him would be, but do they kiss?
Yeah. But are they doing it?
Yeah.
But will they do it? Are they going to do it? Do they want to do it?
But...
will they do it?
yeah. Voulez-vous coucher avec each other?
Avec each other.
And then there was more to the article about what's coming up in the second season, but I find it kind of spoilery, and I don't like to talk about that kind of stuff on the podcast, so I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to read it. I'll give you one tidbit. At some point this season, they will be going to the Louvre.
I mean, they're in Paris. You have to go to the Louvre if you're in Paris. Yeah. God.
And the Mona Lisa makes the actual Mona Lisa makes an appearance.
Oh, as a zombie?
She climbs out of the picture.
Have you ever seen the Lonely Island film Pop Star Never Stop Stopping?
No, I should watch that.
Oh my god, there's a song in it about the Mona Lisa. It cracks me up.
Is that just... Will Ferrell?
No, Andy Samberg.
Okay.
Yeah, and nice. The song, it's about how overrated the Mona Lisa is. It just makes me laugh every time now. It's really ruined the Mona Lisa for me. But yeah, wonderful.
I mean, it is. I went to the Louvre and it was amazing, the Louvre, right? But when you go to where the Mona Lisa is, have you ever been there?
Yeah.
And it's behind, it's like this, what do you call it? Roped off.
Mm-hmm. It's very far away.
Crowd of people taking pictures, and it's behind glass, very far away, and you're behind the whole crowd.
I'm just like, and it's hey.
Just like, yeah, I kind of see a picture of a girl over there.
You should check out the song. It's really funny. Okay. It always makes me laugh.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. Two more quick things. One, Daryl season three is currently filming in Madrid with, quote, extensive location shooting planned in the Galicia, Aragon, Catalonia, and Valencia regions, each providing a new and unique backdrop for the post-apocalyptic world.
One of which is near Alicante, where I was on my holiday.
That's what I was curious. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was trying to get Norman to come on for number 600, but I don't know if he would anyway, but since they're filming, it seems unlikely. So don't expect that.
Since I scared him off in the hotel, it's probably even less likely. So you're welcome, listeners.
He said only if it's in person.
Oh, damn it.
And then last is about The Last of Us. HBO CEO Casey Bloys told Deadline that they aim to start the next seasons of The Last of Us and The White Lotus in time for them to be considered for the Emmys next year, which would mean they have to premiere by May 31st of 2025. So we know both those shows will most likely start by May. By May 31st.
Okay. Okay. That's some good expectation management. I like it. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I mean, they could start January 1st, but just sometime in that time frame. Mm-hmm. Also, they're casting this Harry Potter series. Did you know about that?
I did.
There's going to be a Harry Potter series on HBO. They're looking for their new Harry, Hermione, and Ron. They're trying to launch by late 2026 or early 2027. And Mark Mylod, who worked on Game of Thrones and Succession, is one of the directors. So hopefully that'll be good.
I don't know how to break it to you, but I think we might be too old.
No, never.
No, we'll turn off.
It's rated TVMA, so.
Yeah, it'll be fine. They've just had really hard lives, okay? It's been a hard term at Hogwarts.
All right, that's it for the news. Let's move on to listener moans, groans, and grunts. So I just asked people... I think what they were hoping for season two.
Amazing. And Steve Brown says, can't wait for season two. You and I both.
He's just hoping there will be a season.
He's just hoping that it's going to come. And you know what, Steve? It is.
It's coming. And when Carver Holthausen says, no sleeves, I hope Daryl wears no sleeves.
His sleeves go to the same place that Vin Diesel's sleeves go. Gloria Letty Hernon says, I can't wait for Daryl and Carol's reunion scene. I hope they don't make us wait a wicked long time.
Yeah. I didn't even thought about that, but that's a good point. I would like to see that in episode one.
Yeah, that'd be good. Take a hint from The Ones Who Live.
Yeah.
Get her done.
Renee says, despite knowing it's unlikely, I'm hoping to see Rishon in the final episode of this season. With Daryl Dixon's season three renewal, the entire team can reunite to fight the variant zombies. So she's hoping Rick shows up in and then stars in season three, and it will be The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon, The Book of Carol, and Here's Rick or something like that. Stuff and things
by Rick.
If they do a reunion, yeah, like an Avengers style final episode where you see everybody, it can be called The Walking Dead Stuff and Things.
Stuff and Things. I love that. Lani Gilbert says, I'll be interested to see how Carol reacts to Laurent due to her complicated history with children. And when Carver Holthausen says, observe les fleurs, Laurent.
That's so funny.
Wait.
Rachel Teal Edwards says, more Trey super cool zombie shit, more Daryl in European outfits. And yeah, I'm excited for the Daryl Carol reunion, but I'm going to enjoy whatever time we have left just with Daryl and his own adventures and self-discovery and whatnot. Rachel just, I think, binged Daryl and she loved it.
Oh, that's really good. Andy Fisher says, I'm hoping Carol comes in and does a Terminus. Also, I'm curious about the cities in France. It looks beautiful, but did they ring true to you? Also, only on The Walking Dead and the timeline information, and the Department for Suspension of Disbelief. We can continue doing those. That's our thing.
Absolutely.
I've been to France a couple of times, mainly Paris. Paris rang true for me.
Well, they're filming it there.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what you mean, Andy, like... They're filming it in France, so totally. Yeah.
You should go, man. Go.
I mean, usually there's more people and cars and stuff and less zombies.
Yeah, I would say less. I would say at least a few less zombies overall. Depends which nightclub you go to.
He says, I'm hoping Carol comes in and does a Terminus, so he wants her to like start eating people. Or
that's definitely how I read.
That's what he meant. Yeah. Or blowing shit up. That's probably
or blowing shit up. Both are valid.
Ben Beck says, I'm still waiting to hear back, but almost likely be in New York City next month for Paley Fest New York Showcase for Daryl Dixon, Book of Carol. And if I'm approved, means I'll get to see advanced screenings of some episodes as well as get to interview Norman and Melissa. They're also having a showcase of What We Do in the Shadows that same day. That is cool. Ask Norman if he remembers the woman from the bathrobe in Spain. The woman in the bathrobe in Spain.
I'll text you some photos, Ben. I'll text you, okay? Just put me on speaker. That'd be funny if we
tried to just whatever connections we have of people who might interview him and convince them to ask that.
Do you remember in Alicante, right? And he's like, no, I obviously don't remember this. And I'm like, but it was so memorable. And he's like, you're mental. I'm like, fair enough.
He's like, women in bathrobes approach me all the time.
He's like, this is like a regular day for me.
That's awesome, Ben. That's really cool.
I'm very jealous. That sounds really cool. If that happens, you'll have to come on and tell us all about it. Right. That'd be amazing.
Also, we have all the screeners, so nanny, nanny.
Journeyner. Matthew Rimmer says, more stunning French landscapes and architecture. It helps give the show its feel. And keep tapping into the rich vein that is Daryl's dry sense of humor. Norman Reedus has been gifted some of the best dialogue he's ever had in this show, especially compared to that season or two mid The Walking Dead where Daryl got little more than grunting. Yeah, fair. I'm also intrigued to see Carol and Isabel interact, and hopefully there'll be less of a delay in getting season two in the UK. A year-long wait in the UK means I'm only just now getting to your season one coverage, as I had to avoid all spoilers. I would hope, Matthew, that because there's a deal now and they've got a network, that it will be less of a wait, but you just don't know. It's been kind of rubbish for my UK folks.
Have you heard anything? You haven't heard anything, huh? Because, we didn't really look it up, but you'd hope it would be coming out at the same time.
Yeah, you would really hope so.
Wyman Owen, who I haven't heard from in a while, says, France won't know what hit them. I'm so glad that Melissa McBride came back for season two after she took some time off and opted out of season one. Carol's going to do some unpredictable shit. People are going to die. He's like immediately predicting what's going to happen. The journey to France could be interesting. Boat, plane, not strands, blimp. However it happens, this is going to be a reunion of two people I won't want to miss. Side note, I started listening to y'all again, went back to your first episode of the rewatch, and to my surprise, I left a comment regarding The Walking Dead Destinies. If there's a price drop, I'll pick it up and let you know how crappy it really is. I haven't listened since The Walking Dead finale. Sorry, I'm back now, and I missed this. Can't wait for the Book of Carol. Don't get bit. Bye. He's already got the bye, so.
Wyman. It's so
great
to
have you back,
bet.
Wyman. Yeah.
Speaking of old friends, we've got Lara Willie Swink, who says, I'm so excited to be in France again. I'm really curious to see how the hell Carol makes it back to France and how she's going to find the proverbial needle in a haystack. But Daryl and Carol always make it back to each other, so the only question will be, how long will it take? Since Lauren Ridloff is obviously tied up with the MCU and Connell is never going to be a thing, I'm fully on the Isabixen ship, if for anything, to wash the bad taste of what's her name dog's mom from my memory. Plus, I love Clemence Posey. She's obviously beautiful, but she also has a broken sadness that might understand the loneliness in Daryl. Mm-hmm. I look forward to seeing Laurent because I really like the kid. I'm hoping he toughens up a bit more, but I still want him to have the hope and kindness he had in season one. I'd like them to resolve the Messiah issue, but I did kind of like the mysticism that it lent to the show that vibes with the most with beautiful settings featured in season one, and really hope the show retains that, kind of set it apart from the main show. I love that Jason always calls it the Daryl Show instead of Daryl Dixon. I say keep that up, but now you'll have to call it the Daryl and Carol Show rather than Daryl Dixon, the Book of Carol, chapter 5, verses 1 through 7. Thanks, Lara. I want to call it Bike and Bake.
I think they do hashtag Carol, C-A-R-Y-L, but that just sounds like Carol. I love all that, Laura, and I agree with everything you just said.
Yeah.
Great message. Andrea Abarca says, hi, Jason and Lucy. It's been a while since I've written in, but I've been loving the podcast and listening Andrea. In every week. Thank you. Hoping you're feeling better, Jason. I'm not, but thanks. A little better. I know you're doing a recap of Daryl Dixon today, so all I will say is I've been loving the rewatch. I haven't been watching this season because the governor makes my skin crawl. Dibs to David Morrissey for being such a great actor. But I've loved all the great insights, the talk about music, and reliving some of the best moments of all our beloved characters. Which brings me to Daryl. I'm so excited to see what happens in season two. I can't wait for Daryl and Carol to find each other. I'll make one comment about the news Jason read last week about romance between Daryl and Carol. I'm one of those that always wanted that. So Isabel, no, ew, please no. Maybe Carol will think she's a zombie and shoot an arrow in her head.
Oh, wow.
Did I say that out loud? Sorry, Isabel. Okay, maybe we don't need to shoot her, but still, ew, no. Anyway, I look forward to watching The Book of Carol with you guys. Can't wait. Thank you for always making my week. I look forward to listening. Love you guys. Don't get bit. Bye. Thanks, Andrea. You know, I got to admit, during the rewatch now in the prison with Carol and Daryl, you know, being so sweet with each other and stuff, there's part of me that still feels, I never was a shipper for them, but there is a part of me that's like, oh, maybe it could have been nice. You know, I'm glad they haven't, but I get that feeling.
I love that Andrea says maybe she'll think she's a walker and shoot her in the head. I think Carol would shoot her in the head anyway. I don't think she needs to do
it. She felt like it.
Oh, I love that. Thank you, Andrea. We have a letter here from Dina. Dina says, I already bought a very good bottle of Sancerre in anticipation of the big game next Sunday, and my husband will make a cassoulet. Oh, I love it when you tie in food and drink with a show. 10 out of 10. My hopes are that season 2 will sustain the same magic as season 1 and continue its exploration of the themes of art, religion, and war. I am nervous about adding Carol to the mix, but she has always encouraged Daryl to grow, pursue healthy romantic attachments, aka Connie, and express his feelings like any good mother slash friend would do. There is one flaw in season 1 that I hope is remedied, the tattoos. Norman Reedus owns this character. He's carved Daryl from stone and he doesn't miss a detail in shaping him. So how did he shrug at the tattoo inconsistencies? From the start of the flagship show, his breast tattoo and the back demons are prominent. That's canon. By the end of the series, Reedus acquires a heart outline on his chest, an intricate rabbit on his arm, his big bald head logo, and three crosses on his hand. It bothered me that he chose not to hide these, especially the rabbit, which is too detailed to be done post-apocalypse slash pre-Commonwealth. The choice jars me out of Daryl's character and smack into Norman's personal life. It gets worse into Harold Dixon. The heart outline is on full display shortly after he leaves the beach. So why then, when he's taking a bath, are there absolutely no tattoos on his chest? To be fair, a scar covers his Norman tattoo. I buy that, but where is the giant heart tattoo?
It would be weird if he had Norman tattoo. If Daryl had Norman tattooed on him.
He was the love of my life. Like... Norman. What the fuck? Dog's name is Norman. did a giant heart tattoo. In 2019, I was an extra in a big budget Hollywood film and spent 4 hours in the makeup chair just to transform me into a woman from the late 1800s.
Ooh, cool.
When I asked my stylist why they waste so much time on an extra who will likely never be on screen, she said, but you might be, even if it's just for a second, someone will see you. And if you are not authentic to the period, someone watching it will notice and it will take them right out of the movie and into the real world. Damn if she wasn't right. Your nitpicking friend, Dina. Dina, I hadn't noticed this. I need to go and look out for this now. The inconsistency.
I mean, I hadn't either, but I love that different people notice different things. Like when Peter came on for the kingdom, that Korean zombie period, and had a whole point about the sartorial choice, the clothing and style. That was great. You know, I love that different point of view. And I think if you are the type to notice this kind of thing, you're absolutely right, Dina. They should pay attention to that. Daryl's the main character.
That would drive you
nuts. Not even an extra.
Yeah.
All right, that is our show, episode 599. Thanks for listening, everybody. Glad we're back on this Daryl train.
Yeah, we are.
Next episode is The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon, season 2, episode 1, La Gentillesse des Étrangers, which means the jauntiest days of Tron and Jay. Just kidding. It means the kindness of strangers, I think.
It's like that improv game where you have to like fake translate things, only it's us doing the Daryl Dixon show. My God. If you want to write in or leave us a voice message about it, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, please check out our other podcasts. One is about to start up. It's the Marvel TV cast featuring Agatha All Along. That just came out. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. Have you?
I haven't watched it yet, but I'm really excited. I've got a rare weekend of doing nothing, so I'm going to be catching up on the TV.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And this weekend, From starts again. If you guys haven't checked that out, From on MGM+, creepy, scary, trippy show, and Alex and Lizzie do the What Is From cast, and they interview all the actors. They just talked with Harold Perrineau the other day.
No way.
Perrineau said he wanted to hang out with Alex, and Alex is all giddy about it.
Oh my God.
Which is really cool.
That's really fun.
This episode is made possible by Patreon supporters like Sam Lowe, who've pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonGabassi. So thank you to Sam. Sam is freaking awesome, and she's just become an integral part of the group. She's guested on a lot of podcasts, and she's great. So one of the perks of joining is you might get to talk to Sam.
We love Sam.
All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening. Don't get bit, Daniel Baker.
Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast.